All right. Well, thank you all for coming out. As I said, I know we some people maybe wishing they could be at session. I can get that. Also, sometimes it's might be like, nope, I'm good. Didn't need to. But sometimes I don't know that if I would have a session in me or not. But couldn't make it this time. But hopefully, again in the future, not only I'll be able to make it, but I'll be willing to head into the stage. Sorry. It was meant to be a joke, but it's probably not funny. Okay, so yeah, I'm Tyler. I live on Vancouver Island in the unceded territories of the Sauk Nation people, who have been here for, well, longer than any of us know. I'm on their land as an uninvited guest, so I appreciate where I am here. It's a very beautiful place, and I'm lucky to call it my home and a place where I can practice Zen. So I'm not entirely sure what this talk is. It started as one thing and quickly kind of snowballed into something a little bit different. I don't think it will be too long. So if you have any questions as I'm going or any just comments or thoughts, feel free to speak up. You can throw your hand up or you can just interrupt. I'll try to see hands go up in the cloud and then in the dirt zendo if you just want to give a wave or just as I interrupt is probably best. But yeah, it won't be too long. There'll be time for the conversation. And who knows, maybe you'll be getting out of here early. We just won't tell Domio. There you go. So I've not been practicing Buddhism for too long. But from the get-go, one thing that has always struck me was I noticed early on about these sort of really interesting kind of calls towards Buddhist practice that were couched in this sort of feeling of like urgency, like great, so real, like kind of great urgency. I'm not sure if other folks have ever noticed this. But it's often like in parts of our chants, in some of these kind of one-off sayings. Again, just have this sense of telling us like, okay, yep, it's time to get to business. You've been putting it off long enough. And I was never quite sure why it always intrigued me so much, but it did. I'm sort of drawn to them. And then at other times, especially earlier on in my practice, felt like there was a little bit of stress coming from these calls. So the whole talk started when I noticed something in this book that I'm always reading at some point or another called, oh, you probably can't see it 'cause I got the weird blurry thing on, but it's Being Time. And so it's a practitioner's guide to Dogen's Uji. And it's by Shinshu Roberts, whom I really like her writing. But it examines Dogen's Uji, and I want to talk about his examination of time, and this whole thing, one particular thing about linear time versus how Dogen sort of tries to couch it in this book. But ended up finding this one line that sort of fell into this urgency piece and started focusing on more than that and just sort of went off in a different direction. So in the long run, I might not get too much to Uji, but this just kind of is what it is. So the first one, not the first one I came across in the book, but one of the first ones that I think about when I think about these sorts of sayings or chants or whatever, the first one is, you've probably heard it, you may have heard it called, it says, practice as though your head were on fire. So this is an old Zen saying. It's often attributed to Dogen, and he has definitely used it in some of his writings. But it may have been a saying in Buddhism more widely already. But in one section of the Shobogenzo, Dogen emphasizes the urgency and sort of sincerity that is required in Buddhist practice when he compares the need for wholehearted effort into our practice into how you would react if your head were literally on fire. So if your head were on fire, there'd be immediate total commitment, no hesitation, no concern for anything else until the fire is extinguished. This has also been paraphrased as, yeah, practice as if your head was on fire, or seek the Dharma as if extinguishing a fire on your head. I really like that second one better for one reason or another, so I thought I would add it in. And already, I think maybe with that, you might see something that's inspiring. You might also see something in the that might feel a little, I don't know if I can have concern for nothing else except extinguishing that fire in my life, but we'll get to that a little bit later. The next one that had this one actually is the one I thought of first once I started getting this talk, but I didn't put it up first, and it's one that had a really actually quite an impact on me early on in my practice, and it's that I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, do not pass your days and nights in vain. And this is the closing line to the Sandokai, which explores the relationship between absolute, so ultimate reality or emptiness or whatever, and the relative, so the world of form and everyday experience. So it emphasizes that while these two aspects of existence may seem different, they're actually deeply interconnected and not separated from each other. But it closes with that line, do not pass your days and nights in vain. And that stuck with me since the first time I read it. I at first really loved it, that for about the first year or two, I think I chanted the Sandokai every time I sat Zazen. And I think, I mean, not when I sat with the group, but when I sat on my own. And I think that it was mainly for that line because I found it like it really got me like ready to go. Like I was like, okay, here we go. I'm just gonna like do this thing. However, it turns out this line was also in other ways able to fill me up with doubt and worry in some ways, where I try to figure out whether or not, how do I know whether I'm passing my days and nights in vain, and what practice was in vain and what was not in vain. And like I started being like, oh, okay. So, and I'm just sort of realizing now as I was writing this that this particular line of the Sandokai kind of acted as a bit of a sort of a natural, not a natural koan, but a koan for me, which is great. But if you're not careful, this sort of overthinking can take you into a tailspin of questioning your practice. And then by questioning it, in many ways, you may fall into the trap of evaluating it. So, sure, if I choose to skip Zazen because, or I don't choose, if I skip Zazen, my Zazen, because I got stuck doom scrolling on Instagram or something ridiculous like that. That may feel like a clear example of, yeah, okay, that was not a great use of my time. I was definitely passing my days and nights in vain. And that sucks, but it's also an opportunity to practice just letting go, right? And not hanging on to that sort of like, and that sort of easy one to sort of just let go. I was scrolling too much, I fell asleep, whatever. Yep. Probably was a waste, but I did it. I can let that go. However, it could also start have us questioning, and this one I think is one that can be a little bit more challenging, is have us questioning the quality of our practice or the quality of our zazen. So what was that? That was a bad, hoof, that was bad zazen. I was, doing this, or oh, that one was really good. Like I really like locked in on that zazen. And so it could derail my practice and get away from, just sitting. And this is where I also probably got attached to that, or really enjoyed that quote, and had to, would say it to myself, do not say good or bad, do not judge true or false. It's part of one of the chants we do, which I thought was Dogen, but I couldn't find any proof of that. Not that it necessarily matters, but regardless, it's something that I will say to myself while sitting Zazen or finishing something up, if I'm getting critical of my own practice. So, another one that I quite like that is of the similar vein, is great is the matter of birth and death. All is impermanent, quickly passing. Awake, awake, do not waste this life. And this is a Zen morning chant that, well, I don't know where it came from exactly and wasn't able to find out who wrote it. I didn't have a lot of time to do too much deep diving. I enjoyed the reflection of that same sort of urgency when someone's like saying like, awake, awake. it's startling. It's imploring us not just to wake up from physical drowsiness that we get into with morning zazen, and focusing on not even just intellectually waking up, but sort of like in the more existential, like don't sleepwalk through your life. Like let's awake, let's do this sort of thing. So it helps us to don't waste this time. Our human birth is precious in Buddhism. It's a rare chance to awaken. Don't squander it. And distractions are dullness, sort of thing. And as I was searching around about this line, it was suggested that there is actually a second part that follows it that says, "This life is fleeting, gone in a flash. Awaken to the truth. Do not squander your life." And making the whole chant, "Great is the matter of birth and death. All is impermanent, quickly passing. Awake, awake. Do not waste this life. This life is fleeting, gone in a flash. Awaken to the truth. Do not squander your life." And yeah, I like that one a lot. I've often tried to, I'm not sure if other people have tried to incorporate little, like some of those little chants into their daily routine. So there's like a little chant you can say when you wash your hands, a little chant you can say after you go to the bathroom, and a little chant when you, they've got little things you can say that are meant to, they're meant, I think it's like mindfulness things to help you get going in the moment. And I try to get into the habit of doing them, but almost never do. I always sort of forget pretty quickly and find, I guess, so it's not super effective for me, these sorts of tools in that way. But the one that has really stuck is I have something that I say, a good morning chant I say to my chickens with the play school kids every time we open up their coop and let them out. And that's something like, "Good morning, chickens. Today is the day. May you be well and clucky." And it's just one that we do with the kids every day. And the chickens seem to enjoy it. So that's that one stuck with me, but probably due to its ridiculousness more than anything. But I do like this other morning one that I'd like to start incorporating it into my actual ways of kind of getting me moving in the morning on the right foot. So another one that popped up that I was looking through is, "Thus sages and wise ones in olden times valued each moment, each day, and each month more than their own eyeballs or the nation's land. To waste the passage of time is to be confused and stained in the floating world of name and gain. Not to miss the passage of time is to be in the way for the sake of the way. Once you have clarity, do not neglect a single day." That's from Gyoji's Continuous Practice. And then the one from the book that kind of initially got me started on this little direction, I guess, is, we say, "Oh, don't include me. I am a lost cause. I couldn't possibly be a Buddha. This is not helpful. Look, look," Dogen cries, "take a closer look at your true nature, and you'll discover the Dharma is already in you." And again, "look, look" is sort of like yelled. It's sort of it. Maybe it's like of a bygone era where your teacher would smack you with something to wake you up, to enlighten you. That is probably somewhat romanticized and probably way less fun when you're actually in the middle of it. But I don't know if maybe that's part of what it is that makes me so intrigued about these sayings. And it's not so much that like even that they do much for me now, but maybe it's just that it's interesting about the what it says. I guess it is what's interesting about what it says about Buddhism's belief in what it takes to become enlightened, which, as I'll mention briefly in a second, can definitely be understood within a current cultural context. Like, what does enlightenment mean now? Or what does it mean to you? It may not be someone who, Buddhist who can sit on the zafu and float, that sort of like old understanding of what enlightenment might be. So we find these sayings scattered throughout Zen literature and lore, and are likely so popular as they tend to highlight and promote certain principles within Zen. So one of the first principles that I think is clear, and I've probably said enough, is that it definitely the principle of like urgency. So enlightenment and realization in Zen aren't distant goals to be just that need to be just leisurely pursued, or goals that are meant for someone else in some other place. They require us now and our dedication now. And I think this is important because they say it requires deep dedication, but it, not that we are somehow, that we need to be somehow special or unique in order to obtain enlightenment. Again, enlightenments, however you might want to really think about it. Domio has this thing about enlightenments in a few of her talks, which I quite enjoy. So there's nothing, it doesn't, it's not saying, this is meant only for special people of higher positions within Buddhism or anything in Zen. Enlightened beings are not s to be seen as some unobtainable thing, meant only for specifically special people. It's meant for anyone who is willing, interested, or able to put in the work. At least that is the sort of the way it is being presented to us in the in these passages. A second Buddhist principle that I can think of that it is wholeheartedness. So we're urged to put our whole heart into our Zen practice. They're not, they don't want half heartedness, they want half measures. This is why the practice like your head is on fire is so clear and pertinent. If your head or article of your clothing is on fire, you're not going to casually attempt to put it out or say, eh, I'm feeling a bit sleepy, I'll just put it out tomorrow, right? So just like how we wouldn't think that when taking action, if you're on fire, this, sorry, I've got some of this written down, and so I got it all. So just like how we wouldn't think like that, so we wouldn't think like, oh, I'll do it in the morning, if when taking action, if your hair were on fire, the same level of intensity should be applied to our practice. And yet, even those who may really believe enlightenment is possible, still need a reminding to get to work on it. So, I'll jump to the next one, which is sort of being present in this moment. So that's another obviously important cornerstone of Zen, an important principle of Zen, is being present in our in the moment in our life. So these sayings are a unique way, an interesting way, sometimes a poetic way, to promote the core idea of Zen, focusing on the present moment. So this metaphor drives home the head on fire one, or hair on fire, how fully we should engage with the now, right? Can you imagine, again, having something on fire, a piece of your clothing on fire, and looking at it, and while you're trying to put the fire out, can you imagine your mind also wandering on to like, oh shoot, I forgot to get something at the grocery store, or oh, that person was really rude to me today, or oh, remember that old, rethinking old Simpsons lines? Like, these sorts of things aren't what you would be considering if your head was on fire or an article closes on fire. And this is how we want to be taking on, this is what these little chants, these little quotes, whatever, are trying to get us to take on. It's comical when you think about it, this way. But there is some reality that is, and there is some reality that's important to acknowledge about our lives, and how even if we do really believe, many of us that enlightenment is possible, and we don't, we're not always going to be able to dedicate our entire existence to it. And if that's what it takes to become enlightened, that might be more of a challenge for some of us, but many of us have family and friends and things in our lives that will take up our time. But when we are practicing Zen, when we're having our moments where we're really focusing on it, that's the time to start practice. Well, I mean, that's a time when you can really sort of try to delve into these sort of really other ways of thinking about our practice. So why do I like these sorts of quotes, and why have I brought them up? So I guess it's to say that I find them inspiring. I find them motivating. And as I may have already mentioned, I find them a little stressful, maybe. I mean, I only formally found Buddhism when I was like 36 or 37. So that's a lot of days and nights in vain, I suppose, before that few years of days and nights, where I wasn't practicing. However, it's also really motivating. I find this sort of understanding of Buddhism really motivating and exciting and comforting because really that past doesn't matter, right? It doesn't even exist if you ask Dogen. So all there is and all we need is right here and right now. Those last 36 years, well, now 42 years, they may, they do affect my present. In reality, linear time has impacts and these sorts of things. But all there is and all we need is right here and right now. And all of these short chants are calling on us over and over again to let go of this idea that there's something else we need. There's something that we're missing. There's some other time in some distant future with a different, better me where this could happen. Or we think about it as some culminative thing. So I'm practicing a little bit here, I'm practicing a little bit there, and this will add on top, and we'll kind of all bunch it together. And then in 50 years, all of this will come together, and then it will be what it's, what it is, enlightenment, or what it will be. But there, we don't. These are trying to find creative, inspiring, moving ways to get us to get these thoughts out of our head and just focus on we're missing that that nothing in us is missing and that there is no time in the future to practice. That does not exist because over and over and over again, all we have is now and all we have is just this moment. And again, I think you could find this stressful, but it's also kind of freeing and kind of amazing that Zen consistently tries to tell us and have us believe that there are no gatekeepers guarding our, standing in front of us and, not letting us pass, or, and at least certainly not in Soto Zen, there's no one saying, you're not here yet. No, your practice isn't here yet. That's sort of like, and it can be hard for us in a capitalist society that we've been in to not think of everything as like some kind of merit earned over time meritocracy. I mean, there's definitely ways that that's not actually how it goes, but we're taught that that's the only way to succeed. And so I'm getting off track, but just to tell us to believe that there are no gatekeepers guarding enlightenment, no tests to take, and no things that we have to prove. And this is likely hard for us to accept because it can be antithetical to our culture, where we're always being told we're not quite good enough yet, but we are, and we just need to start practicing now. So that was my talk. As I say, it started as one thing, I went off in a pretty different direction, but I am going to take myself off speaker view for a second. I'm not sure if people had any thoughts or have anything that they were they can think of that made them think about with their practice or experiences they've had in the past with their practice or I guess the past and what they're thinking about in this moment. But if anyone has any thoughts, questions, things like that, I'd love to hear it.
There you are.
Yeah.
Nobody else wants to talk. I can start. This whole thing, that phrase "practicing like your hair's on fire" always kind of missed me. Like, I'm not that ambitious. I don't know that I my kind of motivating factor is bodhisattva vow, right? Like trying to work for the awakening of all beings. And that's such a big job. It doesn't feel like something one could undertake quickly, like, or with that level of intensity. I feel like I almost feel like that's kind of a monk thing. Like if you're going to go and resign yourself to a monastery, then you can just turn up the dials to 11 on awakening. But out here in the world, I take a more sort of measured approach, I think.
Yeah, that's super interesting, and how that could feel like at odds with the Bodhisattva vow. Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't considered it it like that. And I suppose, I guess you could take the similar sort of approach of, if your practice is the Bodhisattva vow, then just like practicing that. And so not so much enlightenment as the goal, but yeah, working for the enlightenment of all people. Are we doing that, in this moment, not waiting for something else before we, start doing that. But yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, can you guys hear me okay? Okay. I really like all of these quotes that you shared, and some of them have really struck me too for their sense of urgency. And I think one thing that I've always found interesting about Zen Buddhism, like I grew up Catholic, and so in Catholicism or maybe other kinds of Christianity, it's everything is about the future. Like this is what's going to happen in the future, and you need to do all of this because that way something good can happen to you in the future. And Zen is not that way at all. It's just like, well, I don't know what's going to happen to you, but you should do this now. I appreciate that about it. It's simple and it's direct. And yeah, like Dave was saying, maybe it's not something you can achieve right this instant, but it's becoming a bodhisattva or whatever, but it's something you can just do right now in the moment. Yeah. So thank you for your talk.
Yeah, thank you. And it reminds, and this is sort of one of the things that this sort of came from was one of the parts of Uji's talk about like practice enlightenment, right? So the like enlightenment isn't necessarily something it's our practice right now, in this moment. That is enlightenment itself. And we can do that in all, not necessarily in some special times in our life, but we can act as if, I think Domio, I think called like faking it till you make it at some point. You just act the part until you finally are or whatever, so that was Kevin.
Yeah, so one of the things that really kind of stands out to me, and I think it's why I'm drawn to Eastern religions, first Taoism and now Buddhism, is the onus is on you to kind of save yourself, right? Like, and so that adds that urgency that you're talking about too, because it's you're not waiting for somebody else. And I think the others have touched on this too, but like you're not waiting for somebody else to come in and swoop in and save you. You have the responsibility. The responsibility is yours to practice, and so that kind of ups the ante a little bit, but in a good way for me. That's why I'm drawn to it. Otherwise,
Thank you, Kevin. Jade, and then I'll get the dirt zendo in a sec there.
Thanks for the talk, Tyler. I think this quote, seek the Dharma like with the urgency of putting out a fire in your head. I always found it like puzzling. Like, wouldn't really quite sure how to parse it, right? Like, I'm gonna pursue non like seek. It's not like Zen's non-action, right? But there's a bit of that, right? Right? Like tranquility, like but with urgency. But like I don't know, I guess it strikes me as kind of koan-y, right? Like, okay, so it's not just right if I'm putting out a fire in my head, right, I'm not stopping, I'm not rationalizing, like I'm not getting my head about it, I'm with wholehearted intention, no, I'm doing this thing now, and if I translate that to okay, how do I translate that energy to sitting and then going through my life, trying to, sit with myself and sit with things as they are. I don't know, it feels kind of, there's like a, it feels like a contradiction there. Like, I'm going to sit with things as they are urgently. But like, I don't know, it's just, that's all I got. It's always struck me as like, kind of like a, I don't know, like a puzzle, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like I know Dogen didn't write all those quotes, but Dogen loves that sort of like, what, there's, yeah, that sort of dual, like there's always just always messing with you on that sort of way of thing. And there's someone in the dirt sendo. I can't
Yes,
see very well.
it's Natalie. Yes.
Okay.
No, well, I actually had the same comment as Jade did about that too. I was feeling that it was very much a paradox. So that was just covered. Also, Tyler, you had made a comment about that we're often very busy. We've got families and friends and this and that. So maybe it's going to take us longer. We don't have as much time to practice our Zen, but I just wanted to make that comment that I like to think of us practicing it all the time. So instead of only just the dedicated, I'm practicing it now that I'm in Zazen and I'm here on the mat or I'm studying this text, just every moment out in the world, that can add up. So just, putting it into action, living the precepts. And so I think it's possible for those moments of enlightenment, those bits of it, to come out in those moments, most more unexpected times too, the mundane moments of your life too, when you're not thinking or necessarily practicing, but we may have those sparks that can just come in just the day-to-day.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I think that's a good point that when, our, sometimes we can think of our urgency or that sort of like real practice is happening while sitting on our zafus, but it's, yeah, we have just as many probably, more meaningful opportunities out in our regular life to really practice this. So thank you. Carson, I think you were next.
Yeah, I think first I just want to say, like, I think I feel the same way about these, where it's very motivating and inspiring on one hand, and then on the other hand, really stressful and maybe a source of guilt of like, oh, I'm not getting to work on this immediately enough or putting enough attention towards it. And then I, maybe feel bad about that. But then at the same time, I often find that kind of, motivating kick in the pants a little helpful of like, oh yeah, that's right, I actually have to like do this if I want to see the results. I can't just come once a week and read some books about it occasionally. I actually have to like work on it and practice. And so all these little sprinkled quotes about getting to work on it immediately are very helpful to me, just a reminder like, oh yeah, that's right. Got to get back to sitting and actually practicing and doing this. And I also like if you just think about this in terms of life in general, if there's something you want that can be achieved through you doing something, are you just gonna like wait and hope 5 years later it appears or it happens, or are you gonna like work towards it? And I feel like Zen needs to be the same thing. Like, this is something you want, you have to work towards it. It's not just gonna happen on its own. You don't just magically become enlightened or read a book and become enlightened. You have to work on it. So I always appreciate these quotes. So thank you for your talk.
Thanks, Carson. Ashley.
Thank you, Tyler. That was such a nice talk. These are like some of my favorite reminders too, and it's nice to remember them again. I think that for me, and I think this is probably relatable, but like so much of my practice is just like feels like trying to get out of my own way, like in terms of just like unlearning or like confronting habit behavior and the excuses are just like the patterns of dial of like narrative that I tell myself over and over. And so I think that these quotes are really helpful in terms of like reminding myself that like practice, well, also the idea that practice can it's happening at all times if you allow it to be. And that I think like for me, so much of my practice is I put so much like emphasis on things that are not very important. Like I check the news a lot instead of sitting in meditation, or if I'm in a rush, I feel like I could focus on my breath and my steps to get to the place I need to be, but instead I'm just focused on thinking about how I'm late or I'm in a rush or like thinking about what's going to happen if if I miss something. And I like the idea that like our practice too, like being at our top, like full, all of our effort and practice can also look different day to day. I think that's the beauty of like the Buddhist practice, is that if you're in a monastery or if you're like a lay person, householder, you're gonna have different challenges, but you can still practice at like your absolute like best level. Because we all have suffering and karma, and that's just like the universal thing. But yeah, thank you for your talk. This was a nice reminder of these really helpful tools.
Thank you. Yeah.
Tyler, thanks very much for this talk. I feel like you surfaced a lot of themes in it. Like a number of folks, I struggle with the guilt, around practice, and am I really applying myself as much as I can? I also just struggle with time itself, or this concept of time. And I had an experience once where I heard something really useful about it, or it was useful to me. I was doing a wilderness session here in the Northwest, and we were very much not on clock time. It was very much just with the light, and even the sitting periods were kind of flexible in terms of how long they went for. But at one point, the person leading the session said, in kind of a Teisho, let go of the future, let go of the past. And I spent a lot of time in both of those places, but I appreciated that. But then they said, and then let go of the present. So just let go of all of these constructs of time. And that was really useful to me because, I would like to just completely step out of that whole framework sometimes. Feels even, maybe even more immediate.
Thank you. Yeah, I've found the sort of the Zen concept of time just be like something that I consistently go back to, and I think maybe I'm wrapping my head around it in some way, but then a month or two later I'm like, I don't know, I gotta end. And but I think what you're expressing there is like getting a chance, an opportunity to like, when we go to session, we can experience that a little bit differently because we live in a culture where time is, real in a sense, even very important for our day-to-day lives. But I've been thinking of it more and more as I've just completed my counseling degree. So I'm a counselor now. I've been trying to figure out, how to do. I've been looking around to see what other people have written on sort of how these, Zen Buddhist specific techniques can be used in counseling with mostly with other, I think with other Buddhists, not just sort of as a wellness practice with anyone. But yeah, the sort of idea of how, because our past is, your past is such a huge part of counseling, but so is the present, right? And like just sort of this is, I keep going back to the idea of like how our past, our trauma or whatever is, are kind of in this moment right here. And then yeah, how do you let go of that present moment? Because they talk about how it's completely ungraspable, right? You cannot grasp even the present moment, even though that's the thing we're in, because it's just constantly in flux. And this idea of attaining it or grasping it or any having any that, I think that's part of like letting go of attachment to it, is so such a focus, but it's a real challenge. I think especially for us in our culture where time is just so ingrained in us as an important real thing, at least for me anyway.
I think one of the reasons why the whole fire on the head thing never really spoke to me is because I feel like by invoking fire, you kind of like are saying that you should have a sense of panic. Like you should like you're something is happening, you need to respond to in almost like in a frantic way. But I don't know if that's necessarily what they meant. That just how it strikes me, but I feel like if you could replace just wholeheartedness for that intensity, like you know, if you wholeheartedly, you don't necessarily have to be doing it in a you know, like a fire putting out pace. You know, you can do lots of things slowly or quickly in a wholehearted way, you know.
Jade, were you going to respond to that, or is a
Yeah, I
yeah.
was gonna say like the wholeheartedness makes sense. It's almost like I was thinking about like I wouldn't. I was putting out fire in my head. I wouldn't think about it. I wouldn't. It's just a thing I would do, right? There's almost a automaticness, which doesn't. I don't know. I'm still just trying to square the like. How do I go and urgently non do a thing, right? Like, and I think the other thing is that it's very quick, right? It's not. You were talking earlier about how like it's easy to think about practice as like, oh, well, I'm going to keep doing it and it's going to accumulate. And then in 30 years, maybe I'll be enlightened. It's almost thinking about it as like, okay, you're no, like sit down and take care of it. It's almost like, no, it's like a, it could happen. I don't know. It's like, it's hard to think about. Like, you could just do it, but like, all right, where do I, where's the switch I throw then? I don't know.
That's both really interesting. I think that the urgency piece, yeah, it seems like there's like a speed to it, which is kind of funny because everything in Zen is slow, right? Like there's nothing we do in Zen that's actually fast. You know, our walking, our drinking, our eating, whatever, it's all very slow. So it's kind of a funny metaphor to use, which makes you feel like it's really fast. But I wonder, and then I wonder if the idea of like, yeah, like you're it's like letting go of like think without thinking, like that sort of like, so like the fire in your head, you're just doing it because that's what you have to do in that moment. And so without putting much thought into it, and like, but like that, as some ways that's how they tell us to, you know, to do our Zen is to get rid of the thought, right? Just do it. There's something, maybe there's something natural. I don't know that there's something natural within us that's Zen, but maybe that's what they're sort of getting at. Yeah, it is interesting to think of like them saying, don't think, just, well, don't think, just do. Like that does sound a little bit zenny, but yeah, urgently or fast or anything like that. I think wholehearted or yeah, a word like that can bring the same urgency, but without the idea of like panic or like or something like that. Yeah, Betty.
Yeah, I just the fire on the head metaphor, to me, I always took it as like those are my thoughts. The thoughts are the fire that's like just kind of like going out of control in my on my head or in my head. And if you put it out, then everything's like clear and calm. So yeah, I can see how it could sound like panicky. But to me, it was always just more about like those are my thoughts.
There's another story, a similar story too, and I can just paraphrase it. A student goes to a master, a Zen master, and says, I want to learn about the way. And then the Zen master plunges this would-be student's head into a stream and holds it under the water until he's just about drowning. Then he lets him go, and he says, when you want to study as much as you wanted to breathe, it'll come back. So it's kind of, yeah, intense, and but it's sort of similar, you know, just in terms of suggesting that you need to bring a certain kind of intensity to your practice. But
I dig stories like that. When I hear them, I almost feel like it's like this weird sort of toxic masculinity in there. Like you're doing, you're drowning people or punching people or doing, you know, there's, I almost feel like they're just kind of bragging about how tough they are or something. I don't know.
Samurai's in.
Somebody was talking earlier about the idea of it kind of coming automatically. That's something that I go back to a lot. You know, people talk about how does one, or you know, give or let compassion arise in you or this, that. But you know, Domio often talks about the hand, like in the night, adjusting the pillow for the head. Like, you know, if the head's uncomfortable, the hand just moves the pillow without having to consider it. And I think that's kind of baked into our pie there, where we these the precepts are not something that you have to memorize. It's something that you have to like uncover and realize. It's in there, and you just got to clear the way for it.
Yeah, I like that. That's sort of, yeah, the automatic that makes a, I like the way you put that. Very nice. Ashley.
For the sitting like your head's on fire, I actually never really thought about it as like a fire to be put out. And I found the that visual kind of helpful for me, but I when I first heard about this and just until this conversation, really, I was thinking of I was visualizing it as like a fire that I'm tending to. I don't want it to get too big or too small, so I have to just like care for it with attention. I just thought I would share that in case that's helpful for anyone.
Yeah, I like that you and Betty had like just these like really like positive interpretations of that of what could be I think of like a stressful thought. Yeah, that was really nice. I'm not as good at sitting in silence as Domio is and waiting for people to talk. I'm always impressed with how long she'll just be like, But yeah, did anyone else have anything else that they're feeling they've been holding back or suddenly came to their mind that they wanted to bring up?
It just occurred to me that we had, at some point we ought to just like conspire and everyone agrees to just not say anything until Domio breaks the silence to just see how long she lasts.
That would be a fun, that would be a fun activity. Yeah,
We might be there for like a day, you
I
know.
don't think she'd I don't think she'd break. I'd break before she would, or the awkwardness of it. I couldn't do it. I'd have to leave. Charles.
I was just going to say, I love the part in one of the quotes that you read that talked about not squandering. That's something that I just, it's almost like a personal mantra to just like not squander. In my like affirmations, I talk about how I'm grateful for this opportunity just in life. You know, the opportunity to practice Zen and practice yoga and all of that stuff. But yeah, I try to find ways to not squander just about like every day. And I just like that you talked about that. But thanks, guys.
Yeah, and something I like about Zen is that they seem to have like created a lot of opportunities and ways that we don't just have to be like squander, you know, just if you don't sit in your cushion all day or go to Sesshin all week, is not that's not necessarily just squandering your time. Like when you're doing, they give you opportunity, you know, it helps us give us tools to do lots of things in our lives, but in a way that's also supporting our practice. And so, you know, you can go and do things that don't might not feel like Zen. Send things, but if you're doing them, you know, they give you these tools to do them, you can it can totally be a part of your practice, and a really meaningful part of your practice. So yeah, I like that. It's because don't squander, because that could like kind of feel a little bit like gets my back up, but I really like it. as a saying too, I found it really useful, but also because Zen gives you all these tools to, you know, gardening is a bad example because that's not, it's hard to think of that as squandering your time, but you know, you can, there's lots in gardening that you can turn into your practice and things like that. So, yeah.
And on that point, like gardening, you know, I think just I resist the impulse to make every moment productive. I think, you know, being productive all the time is something that we're kind of asked to do in society, and I think that it's worthwhile to resist that. But again, like you're saying, gardening, I would consider not a waste of time. Like that is a definitely a productive use of time, even though it's not cushion time, right? Like I'll sit and just watch a sunset or something and consider that well spent time.
Yeah, I think that we're this, yeah, culturally is a very specific idea of what should be considered productive. And yeah, for some reason, sitting and watching the sunset wouldn't fall into that category because it doesn't move you towards more money or whatever. But it's, you know, I think within Zen, that'd be considered a really, again, not productive, but wouldn't be squandering, I guess, is what I'm thinking. I don't think Zen would consider sitting and watching the sunset a squandering your time. In fact, you're in that, you know, that's a wonderful way just to be in the moment.
I think there are certain there probably have been and are people though that would say if you're not staring at a wall, you're not doing shit. Like
Oh,
you gotta be doing the thing. Yeah.
right, probably. So, yeah. All right. Well, is not anyone else hopping up? We offer the merits of this Sangha discussion to all so they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha, Prajna, Paramita.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for coming out, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for the talk. And thank you, everyone.